much as Jesus means to me. There's nobody else I know that died to set me free. There's no one can love as much as Jesus can love you. There's not anything, oh, Jesus cannot do.
It would have been around late 1974, early 1975, Dwayne Jordan was asked to work on Candy Gennaro's car. And Candy's boyfriend at the time, future husband, was Peter Gennaro. And they were young members of our branch at the time. And so Dwayne was working underneath the car, and they had used a bumper jack to give him clearance to get underneath. He was lying on his, like on his side, like this. Somehow the bumper jack gave way and it came down on his shoulder, and he felt his back snap and he was pinned down and he's crying out for help. Peter Gennaro at that point, he was maybe 18, 19, He was not a big man. I mean, he was probably certainly no bigger than me at that point. So Peter went over to the bumper and he cried out to God, "Lord, help me to lift this bumper." And he went over, he grabbed it and he lifted it up, and he kept it up long enough for Candy to drag him out. And this was on the engine side of the car that he was lifting it up. And then once she got him out, he let it down. But now Dwayne was lying there. He said he couldn't move. So they were about ready to call an ambulance. And at that point, Dwayne said, no, don't call an ambulance. Call Brother Larry and ask him to bring the blessed oil. I saw him in that condition, and I was just heartbroken. And to be honest with you, I didn't know how to pray, except a very short, "Lord, help him, heal him now." And so we leaned down to help him get up. He said, "No, if God's healed me, I can get up on my own." And he got up. He began walking around, and everybody was in amazement. We were glorifying God, praising God. And he went home, and Elaine, you could take it from there.
Well, I found out that the car had fallen on Dwayne and that he was walking. And I was very concerned about him because I knew that it was a serious injury, and I wanted to make sure the doctor x-rayed his back. So we went into town the next day to Rehoboth, and the doctor that examined him, and they took x-rays, they said that they saw a small crack on his spinal cord, and that it looked like it had healed. And he said, "Dwayne, I want you to see somebody who had an accident similar to you, and he's now paraplegic." And Dwayne was just amazed, and I was there with him. And we knew God had intervened, and we were just thanking God because it was truly a miracle. I reflect on that day, and I think to myself, I could have lost my husband and he could have been paralyzed, but God's mercy and healing prevailed.
And within a few days, he was out logging with us up in the mountains.
Which says as much about my father's stubbornness as it says about anything else.
That's why I had his back x-rayed. We started a program that was educational in nature and based on the needs of the community. And we had classes in mechanics, We had classes in literacy.
Photography.
Upholstering. And we had them well attended. We even taught music because they wanted to learn how to sing and play a piano, and I taught piano lessons. So in doing that, we got to know the community members fairly well, and those friendships lasted all these years.
Elaine had a desire to teach people to read. So there was one woman in particular who never had the opportunity to go to school, and she wasn't that old. And I remember her working with her. Those were the kinds of things that broke down barriers, because we had strong relationships with David here.
Well, just the youngsters about that high. They started having arts and crafts and stuff, agriculture. And they started having art, like building benches, repairing benches, just all sorts of stuff. A lot of good things going on.
I think I was about 10. Actually, I liked it because, you know, they had classes. They were growing vegetables, and we even do tie-dye type, you know, yeah. With the tie-dye, we do dye the shirt, and I thought that was fun.
She said when she remembered, a lot of women would come here and get affiliated with the place, and they would make clay pots.
Yeah,
pottery. They used to spin it, and they really had fun enjoying it.
One of the classes, as I said, was upholstery. And Chuck and Sylvia Curry were going to come out from California because Chuck was an upholsterer. And so he was going to teach an upholstery class. And they said that they would bring a lot of the materials out with them because he had a truck. And so then he drove out here with that material.
Chuck was going to teach an upholstery class. And we had taken our vacation at that time from work. And on the way up, Chuck had a sewing machine. He had materials. He had needles. And on the way up, he said, "Oh, my." And I said, "What's the matter?" And he said, "Well, you know, I forgot to get the stuff for the stuffing for the chairs. And you know, once we get up there, there's no stores except FedMart, and we'll have to go to Albuquerque." And I said to him, "Don't worry, Chuck, God will provide." And as I said, "God will provide," an upholstery truck passed us on the side real fast. And as it went by and got in front of us, from the truck fell a big bundle, and it rolled along the side. And Chuck and I got out of the truck, and we went to look. And he said, "Oh, Sylvia, this is the material that we need, the stuffing for the chairs." And I said, "Praise God." But he said, "We got to catch that man and return it." And he got back in the truck, but we tried to catch him, but his truck was gone. And so I want to thank God.
When my mom and dad did the upholstery class, and my mother always mentioned this, she always would say that after taking the class, the Native Americans were very grateful. And they even, one woman came up and invited my mom and dad to dinner at their home. And she turned to my dad and she goes, We're going. And it was a great blessing.
You know, when you first move as a child, I didn't understand what was going on. You know, I was only, 4 and a half? Maybe, mm-hmm. when we moved. I was in Southern California in this beautiful preschool with all these kids. I remember painting, and it was just, we had these beautiful instruments. I go from that, and now I'm in a preschool right before we started kindergarten in Navajo, and these ladies were slapping the back of our legs with a ruler, and I was like, what happened to my life, right? And then you go to school, and you look different than everybody else. You know, I think that what happens is at least for me, I know that you guys feel the same. You become a part of the people. You become a part of the land, almost the spirit that's there. And now, whenever I go back, it's like coming home. There's just this sense of being safe and being home, which is why I think we are all driven to go back as often as we can. But it takes living there and being a part of all of that, I think, to some degree, to really understand. But the miracles and the experiences and the relationships that are built there, there's no other way to do that. And so it takes years to build that trust. And Side by Side was a great way to do that, because you're working together. We're teaching together. They were teaching us how to farm and how to do things on the land. And we were teaching them other things that they didn't know how to do, like upholstery and photography and whatever else. But some of the teachers in Side by Side were Native people that were teaching those classes. My cake decorating was taught by a Native woman from Navajo. So it was just this joint thing that we were doing to help each other and to learn from one another. And I think now, all of those years later, we have people coming that were part of that back then, either as children, some of them were much older that are passing on now, but it created a trust. And that trust was really necessary, I think, for this work to succeed. But it's taken years.
Yes, Uncle Larry was talking about the Sons of Messiah and how inspired they were by the Sons of Messiah. Well, if you're familiar with the Book of Mormon, in the Book of Mormon, there's a man named Ammon. And Ammon goes to the king among the Lamanites and says, I want to become your servant. Well, as a result of that and some events that happen after that, he becomes a servant in the house of the king. And from that position is able to engage in a great deal of missionary work, and a lot of people come to the Lord. I've always found it remarkable how similar that story is to what happened to my father when he came here. My father did not have a job. And he, unlike my Uncle Dennis and my Uncle Larry, who were licensed teachers and had natural jobs to look for because they could work at the schools here, he didn't have anything like that lined up. So he went to a Navajo agency and he said, I'll volunteer here. And I'll bring all my skills that I'd learned from my previous jobs. And you don't have to pay me, but I want to help you. So they bring him in. They say, great, we'd love the help. And eventually they start paying him. So he comes to the attention of the chairman of the Navajo people, a guy named Peter McDonald, who, in my opinion, was the most powerful Native American of the 20th century. And Peter McDonald elevates my father and has him become what they call at the time the executive administrator of the tribe. They now call it chief of staff. In other words, for Peter McDonald, my father was running the Navajo Nation. And this is less than 10 years after Dad's first experiences here, and only a few years after we moved here. In our home, we have a picture of my father and Peter McDonald and Jimmy Carter in Washington. Dad and Chairman McDonald had gone to Washington for an event honoring the Navajo Code Talkers. My father was very involved in arranging the honorarium for the Navajo Code Talkers. And I always think, you know, how amazing it is in terms of my father's story that less than 10 years after that child said to him, I don't have clothes to go to church, and my father became so impassioned about working among Native Americans that he would be standing in Washington, D.C. with the President of the United States and the chairman of the Navajo tribe to honor the fallen soldiers and the living soldiers from World War II that helped. And the Kotuckers, yeah, I'm talking about the Kotuckers that helped save America during World War II. And I think it says a lot about how much God was blessing this work. And how much the path that they were on was similar to the path that the sons of Mosiah followed. That they didn't come to be overlords or teachers or to be held up, but they came to be servants. And the elevation came from God to put them in positions where they would be advisors to the Navajo leaders of the time. And I think that's such an amazing story and an amazing part of this, that God was blessing everybody in their careers and in their paths. My uncle in education, my mom in psychology, my uncle Dennis in education, and that they were making, you know, tangible contributions to the community, making their own, you know, indentation into the history of the Navajo people as a part of becoming a part of this community. You know, and like Ammon Wood said to King Lamoni, you know, I'll be here perhaps until I die here. You know, Dad was here until he died and was serving the Navajo people, literally until the day he died.
He can heal the lame and blind and all afflictions of the mind, hearing the sin.